Welcome back. This is Manuel Criollo, and you're listening to Voices from the Frontlines. On the phone, we have Walter Lippmann, the king of the webmaster of the Cuba News and a longtime activist in the Cuba Solidarity Movement. Welcome, Walter.
Hi, Manuel.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Great.
Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to the segment with Dagoberto at the intersection down in Washington. Did you get a chance at all to?
I was sitting right here.
Great. Well, you know, let's start with this. I mean, can you describe, you know, what's your thoughts about this commission, especially because, you know, many forces inside the U.S. want, you know, normalized relationships with Cuba, and many have described that this commission is just a media ploy to win votes in South Florida from the Cubans and Cuban American exile community for the 2004 elections. What are your thoughts about this commission, and do you believe this perception is solely really is a media ploy to just win votes for the Bush administration?
No, I don't think it's just a ploy. It is a ploy, and it's more than that, and I don't think it can and should be dismissed as just that. First of all, I actually will tell you that I have printed it out, and while I haven't read every word, I've looked through it fairly carefully, and I would recommend that people do that. It's at the State Department website, but so I think it is worth looking at. Now, of course, it is very much aimed at the Miami Cubans, and it's aimed at dividing Cubans who live in the United States against one another. You know, those who came to the United States in the very earliest years, they basically have few or no relatives left. And the ones that have come in the last 20, 25 years have relatives, and they go regularly. And this is aimed at them and punishing them. You remember, of course, Elian Gonzalez, the little boy that was brought here by his mother, or she tried to come and she was killed when the boat sank. Well, when that child was here, the family that the administration gave this child to were a bunch of these right-wing Cubans in Miami, and they refused to turn the child over to his father, who was alive and well and active. And what's happening now, the way it seems to me, is they were saying that they had a right, these Cubans in Miami, they thought that they had a right to keep this child here away from his family simply because they disagreed with his father's politics. Well, now what the Bush administration is doing with telling people they cannot go to see their family members except for once every 3 years, they're turning everybody into Elian Gonzalez. Can you imagine somebody from the United States government telling a group of people they can't go see their mother except once in 3 years? It's unbelievable. And they're serious. They actually mean to implement this. And they're not joking, so I think we need to see it both as an electoral thing and as something they really plan to implement.
Can you can you try to contextualize for some readers, for some listeners, about what's behind these recent developments from the Bush administration's, you know, to intensify this 45-year-old U.S.-sponsored economic blockade of the island. Last year I know he restricted U.S. citizens to travel to the island, or restricted much more the license to be given out, especially in a time when both the Senate and the U.S. House had voted to oppose the travel restrictions. How do you understand what the Bush administration is trying to attempt to do here?
Well, I think that what they are attempting to do, and they're quite open about it, they are trying to destabilize Cuba, and they're trying to create social and economic havoc and disruption within the island, so that, in their opinion, what they want to do is to try to starve those people into submission so that they will turn around and then welcome the United States back in there. That's really what this is about. And I have to say one other thing. You know, they say this is we're in Los Angeles, so we can say in Hollywood, you know, timing is everything. I cannot think of anything more extraordinary than to think that on the day, on Thursday, when the Bush Commission was announced with all of these recommendations, here we are at the same time having these unbelievable photographic images of this horrible torture that's going on in Iraq. And this, I think, is proof positive. This is exactly how the Bush administration, they said they were going to liberate Iraq. Well, that's what they would do to Cuba if they could get their hands on it.
Walter, you know, I know we were talking about late last week sometime, about your impressions of Cuba. Can you give the listener, you know, on KPFK, what's been your impressions of your travels to Cuba, and how do you think these recommendations are going to impact the folks in Cuba?
Well, it will impact Cuba in two ways. First of all, what it's designed to do, whether or not it will accomplish its goals is another story, but what it's designed to do is to prevent and make it difficult for Cuban Americans and other people, but this is largely aimed at Cuban Americans. It's designed to prevent them from going to Cuba and spending money and helping their families. Now, people in Cuba live in very difficult economic circumstances. There may be no homeless people, and there may be you don't pay when you go to the doctor, and what you pay for medicines is pennies. But the cost of living in Cuba is not cheap. So I think that this is designed to make it much more difficult. And a lot of people in Cuba receive money from their relatives and receive visits from their relatives. So it's aimed at doing that. And also, the money, you know, when you go into what they call these dollar stores, they call them shopping stores in Cuba, some things you will find there are really unusually expensive. And the reason that's true is that the Cuban government collects these dollars, and they use these dollars to subsidize the Cuban economy. That is, every child, you know, health care and education are completely free. Most people pay nothing for housing. People pay what is so little for utilities, for electricity, for telephone. Can you imagine? My monthly telephone bill here, my basic service, is $30 a month. In Cuba, your basic monthly telephone service is, are you ready? 6 Cuban pesos. That's about 25 cents per month to have a telephone. Mm-hmm. So it's aimed at making life much more difficult for people, and hopefully, in their mind, turning people against the Cuban government.
Have you had any opportunities to talk to any of your friends that you've made in Cuba throughout this time, in the last couple of days, and what's their impressions of?
No, not in the last couple of days.
Well, let's go into the conversation about, you know, what's up with the...
Oh, and there's something else about this commission.
Go ahead.
And I want to tell you about. If you read the report, and it talks about bringing democracy to Cuba, transparency, open government, elections, all those wonderful things that we have here. And what is so striking is this commission was created in October and met for 6 months in absolute secrecy. This commission, which is bringing these proposals for transparency and democracy, met in absolute secrecy. And if you go to the State Department website and read the material, there's one item that's not listed there, and it's one that I myself have not seen. But there is actually a secret section to the report that's classified that you and I can't see. Mm-hmm. So, and this, I know this, not because I've seen it, of course, which I haven't, but the AP reporter that's been at the State Department for 30 years is a man named George Gedda, G-E-D-D-A. He said that there's a confidential, there's a secret classified part. Now, we know the United States has a history in third world countries of organizing plots and schemes and assassinations. and I have, you know, I haven't seen it, but I'm sure the whatever's in that secret report is going along the same lines, but even more so than what's in the open report.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if you read through this, I was looking at the executive summary, and, you know, you see the setting up of a position called the transition coordinator. Basically, this person will facilitate, as they call, you know, pro-democracy, civil society building, and, you know, will move forward toward the transition that the U.S. wants to see in this plan. You know, I mean, like Tammy had asked Dagoberto, you know, there's already, you know, sort of an overview of what privatization is going to look like of the state enterprises throughout Cuba. There's conversations. Obviously, there's no conversation around self-determination if the Cuban people want or don't want a free, you know, an open and free economy as they have chosen to write up in this report.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's move into the question that I
do want to ask. I do want to throw one other thing from this report. Now I'm looking. I told you I printed it out.
Right.
And you know, here we've been looking at all these horrible pictures in Iraq. This is on page 147. Recommendation. Quote. It will likely be important to help provide emergency treatment and care to meet the immediate needs of the victims of torture. Assistance could include helping conduct an assessment of the prevalence of torture victims and the current capacity for providing immediate short-term and long-term services for victims. Now, I have read, and there is a literature of people who've been in jail in Cuba. No one who has ever written anything about Cuban jails has said anything even remotely describing what we see on television every day. Hmm. So it's unbelievable the nerve that these people have of saying that they are going to try to help the Cuban people. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. I mean, I think that's great because I you know, in our earlier conversation we had last week, we were talking about the famous open letter that many progressives and liberals wrote last year at in the late April, if I remember, when there was the arrest of 75, you know, so-called dissidents inside of Cuba. And
you should talk about that. That's
yeah, no, most definitely. And you know, and I saw in the executive summary, the Bush administration already talks about that, how folks who at one time stood for the Cuban Revolution are now speaking publicly. And can you sort of, you know, remind our listeners what happened in last April and who was involved in the name calling and you know the just the whole signatures that were collected in early May, late April.
Sure. Well, briefly, in last March and April, the Cuban government arrested, charged and convicted 75 individuals of violating certain Cuban laws. And these people were determined, and I must say I have not read court transcripts, but the Cuban government did publish a large book called Los Disidentes, The Dissidents, in which it provides a profile of these people who call themselves independent journalists, independent librarians, independent this and independent that. These people were receiving funds from the U.S. interest section. They were meeting directly with James Kaysen, who is the director, who is the head of the Cuban interest section in Cuba. He even helped them set up a new political party in his own home.
Hmm.
That's the kind of thing that these people were doing, and they were convicted for that, and it caused a great deal of fuss all around the world. Now, these people have been in jail for a year, and in fact, just yesterday, there was a march in Cuba of 30 of the wives and girlfriends of these people. Now, these people have been in jail for a year, and there hasn't been a single story of any torture or any action against them in any way. That's the first thing. And the second thing, well, I just have to throw this in because it just came a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
I just got news reports both from Reuters and from the Voice of America that this new Bush plan has been publicly denounced by three of the most prominent of the Cuban dissidents themselves, Oswaldo Payá, Elizardo Sanchez, and Eloy Gutierrez Menoyo. Oh. He's a man who spent 22 years in prison in Cuba.
Right.
These people issued a public statement that just came out today attacking Bush's statement and saying they reject this. Nevertheless, going back to your previous statement, the question you were asking before, a large number of people on the political left, some of whom who had been considered very much, very strongly friends of Cuba, issued public statements last spring criticizing the arrests and the arrests and the trials and the long sentences to which these people have been subjected. Some of the most famous people who signed these things are, of course, people like Noam Chomsky and people like Howard Zinn. Now, the Cubans, I think, have followed a very intelligent and a very thoughtful approach to dealing with these people. Of course, they didn't agree with them. They didn't appreciate them signing these letters. But instead of attacking them and seeing them as their enemy, what the Cubans did, I think, they approached them very intelligently. The first thing they began to do is they began publishing, since this occurred at the time of the beginning of the Iraq War, they began publishing in the Cuban media statements and letters and articles by Chomsky, by Zinn, by other people attacking the Iraq War. They began circulating a petition called the Call to the Conscience of the World in Defense of Cuba, which all of these people have signed. Now, just last week, Howard Zinn was in Cuba for a couple of days because his play, Marx in Soho, is about to be produced there. And last fall, Noam Chomsky went to Cuba and spent a whole week there. So they're trying to reach out and discuss with these people, and they, although they didn't appreciate, as I said, I'm sure the Cubans didn't appreciate these petition campaigns. Nevertheless, they are approaching these people in a friendly spirit.
Right. I mean, and at the same time, though, I would say that, you know, if you look at the Progressive Magazine or New Politics, they are pretty strict and strong on their attacks against Cuba. And I think it's a constant, you know, conversation here in the United States about folks not defending the right of self-determination of third world people. And I think many in the spectrum of the left sit in that corner. And I think that sort of that's where the heart of the arguments against Cuba came out last year.
I agree with you. Magazines like New Politics and so forth and other kinds of organizations. Now, these are groups which have always opposed the Cuban Revolution and have never been friendly to Cuba. I was talking specifically about people like Zinn and Chomsky,
right,
who are in a quite a different category.
Walter, can we move a little bit, you know, just talk about, you know, when I was in Cuba, I went in 1998, and I went last year. We were both sort of in the same event at the celebration of the 15th anniversary of the attack of the Moncada.
Right.
And, you know, we had some conversations with folks in the Foreign Affairs Office in La Habana, and you know, there's real serious discussion and real serious analysis inside of Cuba about the possibility of normalized relationships between the United States and Cuba.
They want that very much in Cuba.
Yeah, most definitely. And they know the forces that sort of where they lay, you know, where the different forces pushing for normalized relationship. You know, we even see among even self-described sort of pro-capitalist forces inside the U.S., especially for places where there's a strong Republican base, you know, such as farmers, who, you know, see Cuba as the so-called untapped market. And others who, you know, who are against the restriction of travel as a restriction on the freedom of travel of people, of U.S. citizens. What role do you see for the left and the progressives, especially given the fragmentation inside the left around the relationship to the Cuban Revolution and its political system? What are the implications of trying to really create a strong enough united front to defeat the U.S. imposed embargo inside the U.S.? I mean, do you see any possibilities where, I think if there's ever been an opportunity to break this embargo, it's at this moment when there are different forces coming into the loop that I would say are not necessarily only the left that is pushing. What are the possibilities that you see there? That we can try to build on.
Well, I certainly agree with you that the political left is diverse and divided, and many people on the left are not enthusiastic about and don't support the Cuban Revolution. But nevertheless, many of them can be mobilized in support of the civil liberties of the American people, the right of the American people to travel and visit wherever they like, I think we can be encouraged by the fact that there are more and more people, and we don't have to call them pro-capitalists. They're simply business. They're not pro-capitalists. They are capitalists.
Right.
They're businessmen and businesswomen who would like to go to Cuba and conduct business. You know, Cuba is the very best customer. I don't know if you realize this, but Cuba, in many ways, is the very best customer that the United States has because, under provisions of our own laws, Cuba is required to pay for everything it buys from the United States in cash. Indeed, Cuba has purchased hundreds of millions of dollars of food products and other commodities from the United States in the last couple of years, strictly for cash. They've never been, I mean, if they'd been late with one penny, it would have been a headline in the Miami Herald. Now, as far as the left is concerned, the first and most important thing we all need to do is to support the various efforts that are going on right now in opposition to the blockade. For example, coming up this June and July, the Pastors for Peace are organizing their annual Friendshipment Caravan, in which people will be driving from all over the United States in trucks and vans collecting medical supplies to break this blockade and travel to Cuba and bring trucks, vans, computers, books, and other kinds of things. And the Pastors for Peace is only one. Several other organizations are doing similar. I think we can certainly support that. So that's the kind of thing. Another thing that's very, very important is a story that's been almost completely eliminated from the media. It's the story of these five Cuban men that were arrested in 1998 in Miami. These men had come to the United States to monitor the activities of Cuban-American right-wing terrorist organizations, which have been conducting, in some cases, armed terrorist activities both in the United States and internationally for many, many years. These five men were arrested, and they were put in jail, and they've been sentenced to jail for anywhere from 15 to 25 years in prison for the simple nonviolent act of infiltrating and monitoring the affairs of these right-wing organizations. We need to get people out there and need to get the facts and information about these things.
Two or three weeks ago, we had one of the lawyers for the Cuban Five here on the show. Walter, what's a way that people, I get your daily blast of emails. How can people get on your webpage, and how can they get a contact of you to get a hold of you and get the list on the Cuba list?
Well, there's two things you can do. The simplest and easiest thing for you to do, I have a website. And my name is Walter Lippmann, LIPPMANN. And it's simply, very easy, walterlippmann.com. And my email service, which is a very active and voluminous one, is called CubaNews@Yahoo Groups. The address for that is groups.yahoo.com/group/CubaNews1. That's all very long. Just go to Cuba News. Just go to walterlippmann.com, and all the links are there.
Thank you, Walter, for all the great information. We'll be in touch with you again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Bye-bye.
El Moncada nos mostró el camino a recorrer.